Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. A pair of series creators come your way from Los Angeles this Friday afternoon. Up first, the creator of Shut Eye, Hulu's very offbeat drama that launched Wednesday. Les Boehm joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. That regal bunch of humanity known as the Royals returned last Sunday for their third season on E! We'll explore their latest round of chicanery next half hour with creator Mark Schwann. Also ahead, Smokey Mountain Rides, our private trivia question of the week, an upstairs report on Burgos Revolt, and a unique game, Show to Know. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, happy 100th birthday, Kirk Douglas, and tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. Happy you joined us in wrapping up your week on the Pearl All About Television. 40 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. We are on the sort of the fringe, northern fringe of the big cold belt, grasping the northern half of the nation. But we hope wherever you are, you're doing great. And we're glad you're here for the program All About Television. Two wonderful people coming your way in the hour ahead. We invite you to be in the thick of the conversation. How? Raise your voice, then use this number. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room is open for bids. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and guest 803 is in the room. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Our first live guest from LA, Shut Eye Creator Les Boehm, comes your way after these news notes. Two television networks will team up and simulcast a fundraising concert for people impacted by the recent fires in Tennessee. Smokey Mountain Rides will go live next Tuesday night on RFD-TV and the Country Network. Dolly Parton, Kenny Rogers, and Reba McEntire headline the concert, where viewers can place donations to Parton's My People Fund. SiriusXM Radio will also carry the three-hour special by satellite starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Coming off a big first season of Westworld, executive producer J.J. Abrams will gear up and do a space saga for HBO. Glare is the name, dealing with the colonization of a planet far, far away. The proposed series will be written and co-executive produced by Javier Guillen. HBO has renewed Westworld for a second season, which will probably play in 2018. Separately, sister channel Cinemax is set to revive Strike Back, its first dip in a scripted drama back in 2011. Back will go forward with a new cast and production team. The series finished its fourth and final season until now last year. And now an up quickie on the efforts to keep Good Will Revolt alive after Amazon Studios announced it would drop this rookie drama, despite good critical and audience reviews. Sony, which makes Revolt, is awaiting a pickup deal from either ABC, USA Network, Bravo, Freeform, or Hulu. That's according to The Hollywood Reporter. Lifetime and Netflix may also come in if any of these five second-season arrangements fall through. And that is news notes and a quick up segment for today. Now we're bringing it live from Los Angeles, the creator, executive producer of Hulu's new series, Shut Eye, Les Boehm. Les, welcome in.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you, Les, so for a number of reasons we'll get to later on in the interview. First of all, what kind of audience reaction are you getting from Shut Eye?
It seems to be great. I mean, mostly, the honest one I got was a friend of mine I haven't seen in 30 years who's living in Norway and must have pirated it. people seem to be digging it, which is great.
I understand that a trip or somehow you ran across a tarot card parlor in Los Angeles helped get this show off the ground.
Well, yeah, I had had this idea for a long time, loosely based on actually an idea of my father's, that it would be fun if a fake psychic had real visions. And I had no idea where to set this particular idea. And, you know, there are a lot of card parlors, palm readers in Los Angeles. And I was walking through my neighborhood one day. I like to go on long walks. And there was a parlor, and I went in, and I got what they call in the business a cold reading, meaning, you know, based on just how I looked, you know, I have an earring. I said, I think you were a musician. You know, I also have calluses on my fingers because I play the guitar. Stuff like that. And I left. There was nothing really revealing. You know, they didn't tell me I was going to die soon or anything like that. And I thought, oh, my God, this is where I want to set the story. And then I started writing and researching kind of simultaneously, and here we are.
You said to a reporter that there are as many tarot card parlors in Los Angeles as there are Starbucks. Well, how come?
Well, I think that's true in a lot of big cities. I think I said there were probably as many tarot parlors as there were pot clinics. But I think, you know, it taps into sort of a lot of basic desires for help and connection, and you know, they're like, they could serve either as your doorway to losing your fortune or as cheap therapy.
Now, Shut-Eye is all about someone who sort of lives a fake life, played by Jeffrey Donovan, the wonderful star from Burn Notice, mm-hmm. his first television series since that wrapped up on USA, where because of a freak accident, he starts to become a real clairvoyant. How'd you frame the character to sort of change life as a result of something freaky?
Well, I wanted Shut-Eye to be a story, a long journey towards sainthood. And I know that sounds sort of pompous, but you know, I think the new television has done such a wonderful job of entertaining us by watching really, really bad people behave badly, you know, in the case of Breaking Bad, turn into the monster that was lurking within. And I wanted to see if I could have as much fun trying to tell the story of a basically bad man who slowly becomes good. And so that was sort of the nugget of that this is a petty, crooked man in a world of nasty, crooked people. And because of this accident, because something real happens to him, very, very slowly, if we're lucky enough to keep going, it will be a twisted journey towards the light.
And how ironic is it that you're working with two of the great executive producers of Breaking Bad, namely Melissa Bernstein and Mark Johnson?
It's fantastic. You know, Mark was my this would be outing both of us as old men, but Mark was my second meeting in Hollywood in, I think, 1981. I've known him since then. We've tried to work together forever, and you know, the script was a spec script, and Mark and Melissa were my first choice, not just because I've known Mark forever, but because of that their work is all fantastic. I like every one of their shows, and it proved to be as good an experience as I hoped it would be.
By the way, welcome guest 810 into our room. That's Simon Apple 04 by name, our chat room. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So if you're in the room, put a comment down or a question down, and we'll get it right to our guest, who is Les Boehm. And he is the creator and executive producer of Shut-Eye. It started Wednesday on Hulu. You can get all 10 episodes, by the way, from there, especially if you have a smart TV set or a smart TV device. He's with us this half hour from L.A. on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. I'm an Apple fan who will be live from New York. Delighted you're spending your Friday afternoon with us on Blog Talk Radio. It's appreciated. If you have a question or comment for Les, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room. Coming up Monday on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, America's Next Top Model, after a year off, comes back Monday night, not on the CW, but on VH1. And we will have one of the judges of America's Next Top Model in this new series, Drew Elliott. He joins me live, and he'll lead off Monday's episode exclusively, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, same-day interview right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Let's give us a sense of what Donovan's character goes through, but more equally important, what his family is all about, because it's sort of you have this very unique character engaged with his very, let's say, dysfunctional family.
Well, yeah, it. I think, you know, in again, to wax pretentious for a minute, there's a bit of Macbeth there. And, you know, when you meet Charlie, he's really settled into this mid-level life. I mean, in his for want of a better term, backstory. Charlie's a failed Vegas magician. He wound up making tricks for other magicians, and, you know, unless you're at the top of that food chain, you wind up selling somebody a trick to make a Mustang disappear for a convention, and, you know, you make you kind of eke a living out. And he met his wife. He was married, and he had a daughter, and he started an affair with an exotic dancer in Las Vegas, fell in love, left his wife. The two of them moved to Los Angeles. She had done a few card readings off the strip, and they decided to set up business. And in Los Angeles, the bulk of the parlors are controlled by a couple of families, and it's a pretty closed off world. And if you're not kicking back to those families, you get hurt. And Charlie got hurt, and he struck an uneasy deal with these people that he wouldn't work any long cons. He would just run a few parlors, and he would help them with magic tricks. He could make writing appear up on a wall. He could make a table go up and down. And he's utterly happy in that mid-level life. You know, Macbeth did not want to be the king of Scotland. It was Lady Macbeth who pushed. And he's married to Lady Macbeth. And Linda, his wife, is really not too happy about the settled life that her husband has chosen. And in the course of the pilot, without too many spoilers, she sees a chance to make a big killing, and she tries to convince him that that would be a good idea. I was also intrigued by the idea of this, you know, there are a lot of these parlors in the San Fernando Valley, and I just love the idea that in many ways these people led a fairly normal middle-class life. I realize there's no middle class in America anymore, so that part is fiction. You know, so that they managed to get their son, who's, you know, in middle school, into a private school, and they've got all those sort of concerns, and then a Los Angeles private school, which, you know, suffers from the snottiness of the kind of people whose children go to a Los Angeles private school. That's a rough cross-section for their son to be in. I mean, everybody else's parents are in the entertainment business, or they're lawyers, or they're doctors, and his parents run a chain of psychic parlors. So he's at the sort of angry teenage moment where he could go either way.
From what you're saying, it sounds very Shakespearean picture play, like a little bit of Hamlet, a little bit of Romeo and Juliet, a little bit of Midsummer Night's Dream, you know, pick the play, and there's something Shakespearean in what you're doing.
It's steal from the best, right? That's how it works.
What is it like to work with Jeffrey Donovan and bring him back into television in a very different kind of role than the spy or counter-spy he was playing on Burn Notice?
Well, I've seen Jeffrey in Fargo, and we had just, you know, I had just sold the script to Hulu, and we hadn't really started casting. And I remember saying to my wife, and obviously Fargo, he plays a very different character, and I was like, this guy would be amazing as Charlie. And honestly, and I was a Burn Notice fan, it took me a minute to realize that was a wave. That's Jeffrey. He was in Burn Notice. And I was like, oh, my God, this guy's really good. I mean, it's very, very hard for somebody who's established a TV character to, you know, to get you past whatever character they play. And, you know, when we started casting, you know, I was like, here's who I want. And luckily, everyone agreed. Jeffrey is a wonderful actor. He's a lovely guy, which is a bonus. There was a point where I had to say to him, would you please stop giving me such good notes, because I've said yes to every single one of your notes, and I'm going to start looking like a pushover. You got to say something wrong so I can publicly disagree with you. But he's just great. I can't speak highly enough of him.
The cast also includes a wonderful talent who has branched out her career in a lot of ways, Isabel Rossellini, Ingrid Bergman's daughter, and she plays the patriarch role. Now, A, how did you get Isabelle to do this, which is a very rare series role for her? Secondly, once you put her in the patriarch role, what notes did you give her, what direction did you give her about how to play the role?
Well, you know, we were casting, and our casting people said, you know, you could go to Isabella Rossellini. And I was like, are you kidding me? Really? And they said, yeah. And then they gave her the script, and she liked the script. They said, well, she likes the character, but she'd like to talk to you. And I was like, I can't call Isabella Rossellini. I'm like, I can't do that. But I did. And, you know, we just had a lovely conversation about the script and about her character, and she really liked the character, so she said yes. And in terms of notes, she just came fully armed. You know, there was like, wow, that's great. Yeah, like my only note would be, just keep doing that. And then, you know, the fun part, I guess we were three scripts in when we passed, maybe four, so... You know, everybody in the cast is awesome. And then once you know who's in, you start writing for them, and it just becomes more and more.
When you set out to do Shut-Eye, did you set out to make it very episodic, or did, because of the fact you had the commitment from Hulu to 10 episodes, and all 10 episodes come out at the same time, in this case, this past Wednesday, 48 hours ago, did it impact how you shot or how you and your fellow executive producers did the series? Was it more shot like a movie? Was it more shot like, okay, we'll do it miniseries fashion, or did you want to go in a whole different direction?
Well, I always knew it was going to be a serialized story. And when I sold it, it came complete with a Bible for basically, you know, what I hoped would be 5 years. And so there is, on that level, you kind of know you're writing a very, very long movie. But at the same time, you know, one of the many things I loved about Breaking Bad was that, obviously, it's a serialized show. You have to watch it from beginning to end. But at the same time, every episode is individually satisfying in a way that's, I think, unique to television, as opposed to, you know, the middle 30 minutes of that movie were really something. You know, so if you look back at Breaking Bad, you can really see where every episode was the episode where Walter, blah, blah, blah. You know, here's, they robbed the train. Or that, you know, and so I love being true to both of those things of telling a long, you know, a novel-sized story and of having every chapter be unique. In terms of how we made it, we made it like a television show. You know, it's different directors, and, you know, we shoot them one at a time, and you go with the episodes one at a time, and all of that. But that was the approach.
Shut-Eye is Hulu's last original drama for 2016, and Les Baum is the creator and executive producer. He's with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Very glad he's there, and very glad you are with us also on Blog Talk Radio, wherever you're catching us across the country or around the globe. If you have a question or comment for Les, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name, get 803-810 in the room. We're talking TV tech and where it's going in 2017, a week from today on the program, and we'll have two guests that are both on very interesting sides of where technology is at. Where are smart TVs and smart TV devices going to go? Will we see interactive programming finally happen where you can choose how the show goes? And what about virtual reality? Is that going to become as much a television thing as a headgear thing? On the first half of the hour, we'll talk to a good friend we had earlier in the year, Anthony Ha, the senior writer of TechCrunch, the popular website. And for Roku, their head of product management, Lloyd Clark. So be sure to join us for our all-tech edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. That's next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Less a decade and a half ago, you did a very historic partnership with Steven Spielberg for a miniseries called Taken. It was probably the biggest miniseries to come along in some time. A lot of episodes stretched out over 2 weeks, and it became, on Sci-Fi, the first cable miniseries to win the Emmy Award in that category. When you look back over that project a decade and a half later, what comes immediately to mind that you're most proudest of?
Well, it's a very long story that I could tell you later about how it all came to be. But through a series of sort of mishaps, accidents, and, you know, I guess on some level, students' faith in me, I wound up getting to executive produce, run, and write the entire show. And we moved very fast, and, you know, we were kind of like, we didn't have time to get it completely right, but we also didn't have time to mess it up. And, you know, there were just all these kind of wonderful perks. I'm a musician first. I was a songwriter for a long time, and I wrote a song that Emmy Lou Harris recorded for the show. And, you know, often I think of everything I'm proud of, the thing I'm the most proud of is Emmy Lou Harris recorded a song. It was a blindingly fast, crazy experience, and you know, I never really I hadn't actually sat down and seen the whole thing until maybe 10 years afterwards, when our son was 12 and wanted to see it, and I watched the whole thing with him. And what was really fun about it was that I'd written it in such a blur that there were, like, I literally didn't know what was going to happen to some of the characters. So I got to almost watch something I'd written as if I were for an audience, which was kind of a nice perk.
Your father, Andre Boehm, was a filmmaker who, in 1959, was involved in one of the great Western series ever made, Rawhide. It was the show that, of course, propelled Clint Eastwood to fame. And because of YouTube, we can now see a lot of those episodes. He started a story on the show. He eventually became producer, wrote some of the best episodes. What was the biggest thing your father, in terms of either advice or direction, gave you based on his work on Rawhide about telling a good story on television?
Well, both my parents were writers. My mom actually wrote for Rawhide for a while. My dad has a career that spans from silent movies until a little ways after Rawhide, when he made a movie called Boys of Paul Street. And I think, I mean, he was a wonderful man, very, very much not interested in Hollywood. By the time I started writing, the only thing he could tell me was, don't sign with William Morris. The first script I wrote, I thought, well, I'll write Dirty Harry 3. My dad made a television show with Clint Eastwood. So I wrote a Dirty Harry script, and I told my father, and he said, well, I haven't talked to him since 1963. I have no idea. What I'm trying to say is nepotism didn't do as much for me as I wish it had. But he did give me several phenomenally good pieces of writing advice. My dad was a terrific writer, as was my mom. And there's obviously the first thing he told me was, there's a camera. Anything you can show and not tell, you should show and not tell. Advice which far too many TV shows, sadly, now don't follow a lot. There's a sad lack of cinema a lot of times, and people seem to think that the only thing that matters is the words that come out of the people's mouths, and that's only one of our tools. The other thing, this case would be more than anything, my father once explained to me what bad exposition was. And he said, now we have to switch places. It's now I'm my father talking to you. He said, Les, as you know, I'm your father and. And that was his description of bad exposition, and it's something I take with me in every writer's room. It's like, don't ever do this. It was a powerful advice. He also told me, when in doubt, steal from the 39 steps. There should be a hero who's being chased by both bad guys and the police.
The classic Alfred Hitchcock movie. You know, to you, we now get the chance, Les, to see a lot of the episodes of Rawhide from the various seasons. And one thing that strikes you is that here's the program. I know a lot of people know it for Clint Eastwood. They know the theme music that was sung by Frankie Lane, one of the great, by the way, theme songs of all time, written by the brilliant Dimitri Chalk and lyrics by Len Washington. But you look at these episodes, a lot of them touch on some very unique themes, which were ahead of their time, and they also, there was a very unique mood to the cat. There was a lot of characterization, which for Western in television, either half hour or hour, was very, very rare.
Yeah, I think I was saying this to you before we started, but, you know, it's hard for me to be objective. I mean, I think it's the greatest show ever made, obviously. But, you know, I was a little kid when it was on, and there was actually one season when it was on opposite something everybody in my school was watching. I think it was, you know, maybe a Disney thing or something, and, you know, I was the only kid not watching it. but, yeah, I've looked at a lot of them recently, and I know, you know, they didn't do writer's rooms in those days. And, you know, Charles Warren, who created the show with my dad and then my dad, you know, they knew four or five of these kind of great Western writers who were all, you know, terrific novelists, you know, radio writers, television writers. And my dad would just come up with basic sort of story ideas and either write them himself or get them to one of these guys. And yeah, I mean, they had created a great bunch of characters, and theme was really important to them. And I remember that Charles Warren, who had, you know, come, he was a Western novelist first, and he did Gunsmoke, he did a lot of stuff. And it was important to him in Rawhide that there were never bad Indians. He didn't want to ever do a cattle drive attack by the Indians. So there was never, you know, which I think I don't know if that was out of conscience or just because he thought it was overdone. But interestingly, it sort of led to a kind of Western where that had to tell different stories because they had taken away one of their most obvious tropes. It was a very, very, like, I think television at that time, I mean, you look at Twilight Book, you know, the people were a lot more interested in sort of big themes, in telling stories with big themes. That was really a part of the air of the late 50s and early 60s.
Well, out of his father comes a great son story, and that is Shut-Eye. And you can catch Shut-Eye now. He has a smart TV set or smart TV device tuned to Hulu. All 10 episodes are now available at one time, so you can binge or watch episode by episode, whatever your pleasure is. Once again, Hulu is available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. If you want more details about the show and the other programs that Hulu does as well, is where you go online, www.hulu.com. www.hulu.com. And do check out YouTube for Rawhide. If you've never seen this program, I think you will really, really enjoy it. It is one of the best Westerns ever made, and Angry Bone was a great factor, along with everybody else on the show. Also, a great performance by Eric Fleming as Gil Faber, one of the really great, underrated performances, I think, in any Western series around. Let's go on. The creator of Shut-Eye, executive producer as well, thank you very much for a wonderful half hour. You are delightful. It's a pleasure to have you on the program for the first time, and we'd love to have you back anytime. And good luck with you and your cast and crew for a great, great run.
Well, thank you so much. It was really a lot of fun, and I'll come back anytime you have.
You got it, Les. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Les Bohm, the creator executive producer of Shut-Eye on Hulu, joining us live from Los Angeles. More tomorrow, we tell you, is coming your way, but first some words from our fine folks at Audible.com. You know, are you interested in more great movies? Some of the best were done by a man who was blacklisted in Edward Dmytryk, films like Crossfire and The Young Lions. You can find out about what it was like to be a blacklisted person in Hollywood in a wonderful audiobook just out called Odd Man Out, a memoir of the Hollywood 10, written by director Edward Dmytryk. And you can get it with a 30-day trial at Audible.com. Audible.com is your home for outstanding spoken digital entertainment and information. With over 180,000 titles to choose from, you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now through Blog Talk Radio. Remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, you can get Odd Man Out, a memoir of the Hollywood 10 by Edward Dmytryk, or any audiobook you like, and check it out for 30 days. And the customer service, because it's from Amazon.com, is top of the universe. So hear for yourself why Audible.com is a great sound investment that will move, touch, and inspire you. Go ahead. Give it a try. Audibletrial.com/televised. Audibletrial.com/televised. And I know you'll have a fantastic listening experience. The best for it. This is Tomorrow We Televised, the program all about the two. We're with you Mondays and Fridays, featuring Eastern Pacific here on Blog Talk Radio. And coming up our next half hour, more from Los Angeles, we will have the creator, writer, director of the East popular series, The Royals, just started season 3. And some very interesting events happening in that season. Plus,
We'll have our climate trivia question of the week, and we'll have a show to know about a very unusual game show that's happening Tuesday night on Jeopardy. All that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for the most unique game show in all of radio, Trivial Warfare. Check it out this Sunday on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best feature of your day 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised for this Friday afternoon. Kirk Douglas' 100th birthday. Happy B-Day, Kirk. We're happy you've been around a century, and we hope you're around a long time to come. Simon Appleman with you live from New York, New York. 40 degrees at the top of the hour. Glad you're with us for the promo about television. Another great guest coming your way shortly. If you have a question or comment for that person, give us a ring. 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room. Simon Apple 04. My name is welcome guest 803-828, and our very good friend Rick Webb from Philadelphia. You'll find our chat room at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Eve brought back the Royals for season 3 Sunday night, and we're bringing on right now from Los Angeles its creator, writer, and director, Mark Schwann. Mark, good to have you.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me, Simon.
How are people reacting, Mark, to your third season?
You know, we just had our premiere on Sunday night, and I think that it played really well. It's always tough when you go up against a 90-minute Walking Dead. Nobody likes to do that. But we have a very faithful, dedicated audience, and we always take pains to cater to them. And I think they'll stay with us. I think it's a great season. I think they're really going to like it.
What makes this show tick? Why have people come to this ongoing saga about royalty going crazy?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, when I pitched it, I took the time to sort of state that we don't have a royal family in the States. You know, we're pretty fascinated. If you look at magazine covers and all of the coverage that the royal weddings get and things of that nature, I think, you know, we're accustomed in the United States to having one or two of everything, and it's something that we don't have. So I think we're always compelled, especially when you're looking at a soapy, dramatic world, you're always compelled about facade, you know, what you see and what you're meant to see and what's really happening behind closed doors. And I think that's a big part of the deliciousness, if you will, of this show.
We talk often on this program of what it's like to create a first season of something or to create a second season of something. When you're on to season 3, how do you try with your writers and your crew to keep from, let's say, going to the well, going back to what's been tried and true the first 2 seasons?
Yeah, I love that question. You know, Simon, it's interesting because I did 10 years, 9 seasons of One Tree Hill before this, and we did 22 a year. So, you know, with the Royals, we're doing 10 a year. So I feel like entering season 3, I'm really only entering what would be traditionally my second season of a show. Arrogantly or confidently, depends on who you talk to, I feel like if I create a show and I put it on the air, it's going to be there for 5 years. That's sort of where I set my, you know, my flagpole. I think this show could have a lot longer run than that, but I always sort of believe that I'm signing on for 5 years of storytelling, and I think in the back of my mind, that's where I set the signpost. So, you know, we're just scratching the surface. We introduced a lot of new characters this year. We just got into a major mystery the seeds were planted in the pilot. So, you know, we got a lot of story left to tell. And I always tell the writers, you know, a blank board is opportunity for us. It shouldn't be intimidating. It should be exciting. And that's sort of where we work from.
When characters get introduced, like what you just shared, how do you determine who gets introduced first in a new season, and also why so many in one season? Is there something? Is it plot that forces the new characters come on board? Is it sort of like here's the way we got to keep it fresh?
Yeah, you know, a lot of times you're told or you're taught in a traditional scenario that season 2 is meant for new characters. You know, you introduce an audience to a world and to the people who inhabit that world, and then, you know, you try to find new energy by introducing new characters. I learned on my last show that that wasn't the case. The audience wasn't interested in new characters. They were interested in spending more time with the characters that they had fallen in love with. So I tend not, you know, it's nice to know rules sometimes so that you can break them. I tend not to follow any of that. You know, for me, story dictates everything. And, you know, we had planted the seeds that a character had been killed in the pilot, which thrust our main character into the spotlight. And this season, we're finding out that that character, in fact, was not killed and is very much alive. So, you know, again, it's all driven by story. And then I would say that once in a while, chemistry of characters dictates, you know, what you're doing. You may find that characters either don't have chemistry or do, and that'll dictate sort of what you're going to do in terms of introducing newer characters or staying with what you have. So for me, story wins, and TV is still about people. And I don't want to inundate my audience with a bunch of new people if they're frustrated that they're not getting screen time for the characters they already love. So it's all driven by story for me.
Speaking of time, Mark, when you come off the great run you had with One Tree Hill, where you are doing 22 episodes a year, and you get into an environment of your creation where you're doing 10 or 13 episodes a year, what is the adjustment like, whether it's pace, whether it's, okay, now with less episodes, here's how I have to make a story arc, make a story happen, because you're also going from one type of story, the natural drama of a One Tree Hill, to a story that deals with a certain aspect of, a different aspect of society. How do you adjust?
Well, I lecture my writers a lot of times about we only have 10 a year, so there shouldn't be a clunker in the bunch, you know. There shouldn't be, oh, well, these three are meant to reload the second half of the season or what have you. You know, I don't really believe in bridge episodes anyway. You know, sometimes you'll hear someone say, oh, that was a bridge episode. That just got us from this thing to that thing. Even when we did 22, I never really believed in that. You know, writers have X amount of screen time and X amount of stories they're going to tell, and we should expect all of them to be great. But certainly when you have 10, you know, five episodes is half your season, so those five episodes should be really good. And then you're in your, you know, now you're finishing, you want to finish strong, so that's your other five. So, you know, I like promoting from within. I like raising, you know, lower level, whether they're staff writers or whether they're script coordinators or writer's assistants. I have a long history of doing that. So, you know, I might take the time in the middle of a season to say, you know, our script coordinator is going to get this next episode, and as a writing room, let's make sure that that person is protected and positioned to be great. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, all 10 episodes should be satisfying hours of television. And I will tell you this, it's a really good deal for the studios, and because I spend a complete year making 10, where I used to spend a complete year making 22. Of course, I'm being paid for 10. So I think that they're onto something here. I think they found a really good money-saving. Once again, the house wins because we still spend an entire year making the 10 episodes.
The Royals, 10 episodes. The season 3 began this past Sunday night, and you can catch the episode 2 of the current season this Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on E! We've got the creator, the writer, and director of the show, Mark Schwann. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour, right here on Smartly Televised. Simon Appleman, I'm here with you along for the ride. Glad you're with us on this Friday afternoon. Yes, it is Kirk Douglas' 100th DJ. That is amazing. One of the great actors of our time or any time. Hitting the century mark, and hopefully staying around this earth for a whole lot more. But we're glad to have him aboard on this earth, and you with us. Have a question or a comment for Mark, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Or you're in the chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. It's 803 is in the room, so it's Rick Webb, our very good friend from Philadelphia. America's Next Top Model, after a year off the air, makes its move to VH1 on Monday night. And on Monday, we will have a special same-day interview with one of the judges, Drew Elliott. He will be with us live, and he'll be exclusive with us. That's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, near Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And 1 week from Monday, among our guests, we'll have the cinematographer for DC's popular Legends of Tomorrow on the CW, Malin Fox Williams, rescheduled from an earlier date. That's Malin Fox Williams, the cinematographer for DC Legends of Tomorrow, which is on every week on the CW. He's with us. That's coming up later this month, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Mark, what are some of the plot lines that you and your writers are going to give us in this third season?
Well, it's a lot more relationship-driven this year, I think. You know, we're coming out of a second season that was very mystery-based. There was a whodunit. It was a little darker because we were dealing with the murder. But I think that this season, you know, we talk about in the writer's room quite a bit, you know, once you come out of something like that, can you do episodes where you're just having fun, or can you do episodes where you're, you know, they're romantically based, or they're sexy, or what have you? So I pitched a season that was very relationship driven because I think that's what my fan base is interested in. And the comments that I've heard about the first episode have been sort of along those lines. People thought that it was a little lighter. They thought that it was romantic and sexy. And I think that, you know, look, we're on E, and that's our demo, and that's where we're aiming the show. And I think it's the right thing to do. It also makes for a really good hour of television.
How much research do you and your writers do about what is happening with the royal family or the royalness around them? And how much of that gets incorporated into your plots?
It's pretty funny. You know, we've taken great pains to say it's a British royal family. It's not the British royal family. So, because I think when the show first came on, you know, we shoot it in London, a lot of people over there were very nervous about the sort of heightened, cheeky nature of what we're doing. And I used to say, well, we're not telling stories about that monarchy. We're telling stories about our own, which is true. It is pretty interesting how a lot of sort of storylines, either art has imitated life or life has imitated art. We have a royal consultant, Robert Jobson, who's one of the best royal consultants on the planet, and he'll chime in once in a while about, you know, how would something happen. But it's usually, if, you know, how would they leave the palace and get in the motorcade? How would, you know, it's usually physical stuff as opposed to story stuff, which we're just our own beast, and, you know, we're living in a very sort of fictional, heightened reality. So we don't chase a lot of the real monarchy, but we will chase procedure once in a while or something like that, etiquette or protocol.
On our first half hour, we featured a father and son story behind the scenes. Les Boehm, who's doing Shut-Eye, won the Emmy Award for doing Taken, and his father was Andre Boehm, who was the original story editor and the later producer on Rawhide. This season, you have a mother and son story on screen. Elizabeth Hurley, who's one of the main stars of The Royals, her son Damien is now involved on the series.
Yeah, you know, Damien, he's going to run a studio someday, that kid. You know, he's his mother, he's all access. He was on set all the time. He's a really bright kid. He's a really mature kid and a really sweet kid. People really liked him. You know, that it could be a disaster if number one on the call sheet's son isn't well-liked. But, doesn't make for a great story, but he's a really good kid. And he knew everyone's lines. I would block, when I was directing, I'd block scenes with him if the actors were in hair and makeup. And he clearly had a want and an interest and a knack for the business. So I told Elizabeth that I wanted to write him something if we got a season three, and she was game for it, and he was. And he was wonderful. I mean, he was so natural in the part, and she was thrilled. And I know when she read the script, she got a little teary-eyed and was appreciative of it. So, you know, the kid was around a lot, and everybody liked him, so it was something he was interested in. So we gave it a shot. It worked out great.
Mm-hmm. How much does social media feedback, whether from Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat, how much does that impact what your writers do and also how you and your fellow directors direct episodes?
Well, I like that question. I get that question quite a bit. And, you know, my mantra, because you can imagine, you know, we're in London and we're making this show about a royal family, and a lot of times people on set will say, whether it's crew members or whatever, will say, well, that's not how it would happen. And I would always say to them, well, we're not really chasing that, and we're not, you know, a guy can mow his lawn, and he might mow it perfectly on TV, but nobody's going to watch that. So I used to say, look, we're making this show for 23-year-old girls on Twitter, and if they're happy, we're happy. Obviously, we're you know, I love all the episodes, and I'm, you know, that's got to come first. But I will say this, and I think you know this as well. It's a good question, and I think the fans are always interested in it. We're so far ahead. You know, our season is done. The circus tents are folded up by the time the audience is going to see that first episode of the season. So we have to believe in, you know, in the signpost that we set, in the destination that we're chasing. We have to believe that we know the voice of the show. Now, we'll follow social media a little bit. We love that it's a show that is that the fans are very active in talking about. We'll listen to the loyals, and, you know, we'll see what they're interested in terms of chemistry and storylines and things. We'll consider that when we step into the writer's room for a season 4, God willing, we get it, and I think we will. But we have to believe that as storytellers, we know the show, and we're going to satisfy our audience with the destination. It's not that we're not listening. It's just that, you know, these things are made so far ahead of their reaction.
We're seeing more and more people from independent film, from books, from theater, get into television, Mark, not just as, like you, creator of shows, but also writing and directing the shows, running the shows. You look at Sam Esmail, Mr. Robot. You look at Alan Dan Pastore, who's now doing Incorporated on Sci-Fi. You know, there's more and more prevalent examples. And because a lot of these shows have become more cinematic, they take more creative risks, both in front of the camera and behind the camera. How does that impact what you do? Do you look at other shows like a model of, hey, we've got to raise – I'm wondering how, over these three seasons, you try to raise the creative bar on what you do from season to season, given everything out there.
Well, you know, I always think that storytellers should run their shows. I mean, show running is certainly a skill set that isn't a natural thing. I had to learn how to do it, and I had some good teachers along the way. I had some bad ones. I was told that I picked it up fairly quickly, and I think it's rare when you have a creator of the show who also runs the show. I write, I direct, I executive produce, and I'm, you know, involved actively, and I'm in every edit. So I don't know if that's a natural thing. I think a lot of creators and executive producers have showrunners, whereas I choose to be my own. I do think that we're in sort of a golden age of television, and I think that you can take risks. You know, I had Tommy Kail in my writer's room the last couple seasons. Tommy's the director of Hamilton on Broadway. And when I first said to the studio, I want to hire Tommy Kail, put him in my writer's room, the first thing I got back was, well, he's not a writer. You know, Tommy's is such a visionary and such a smart guy and so good with story that I knew he'd be great in a writer's room. I mean, I wrote 7 of the first 10 episodes that season, so I didn't essentially need a person who could write fade in, although Tommy would be great at it if he wanted to do it. I needed somebody who wanted to tell stories and was invigorated in that arena, and I knew that he'd be, you know, a visionary in that room, and he was. It's not traditional. I have an attorney in my room that's never written a script, but a really smart guy who is, you know, encyclopedic when it comes to television and films. And, you know story and like story and is a contributor in my writer's room in a great way. But again, I have to go to the studio and say, I want to put this guy in my writer's room. They say, well, let me read his sample. I say, he doesn't have one. So, you know, you want to think outside of the box. I mean, we want to put fresh voices in that room because, you know, story is going to dictate everything. Similarly with directors, you know, I had a girl, Erica Dutton, who directed an episode for me this year. She's great. It was only her second hour of television. You know, she directed a One Tree Hill for me once upon a time. She's a woman who's directed some great independent films. She's smart. She's vibrant. Again, you got to go to the studio and say, I know that she's not on everybody's list, but she's going to make a great hour of television, and she did. So, you know, I'm always looking for fresh voices. I think we all are. I think it makes some people a little nervous, but, you know, I moved my life to London for 6 months, and I'm watching everything on this show 24 hours a day. So I think that settles people down a little bit and allows you to take a few risks when you've got someone who's had a little bit of success and is minding the store, if you will.
And you're working for a company called Lionsgate, which just, by the way, made a deal, just wrapped up its Actors of Stars. And Lionsgate, which is probably the biggest independent television studio around. It seems that more often than not, they're willing to take the risk, to take the chances, whether it's with your show, whether it's Orange and New Black, whether it's Greenlighting Dear White People based on the independent movie for Netflix. They're willing to work with anybody, any studio, any production company, any network, to make something happen. When you get, what's it like to work in that kind of environment where you have that CEO behind you saying, do what you want to do, frame the show the way you want, and at the same time is also doing 80, 90 different series, all of which seem to have their own style, their own pace, and also their ability to take risks too?
Yeah, Lionsgate, they're doing some special things over there, I got to tell you. You know, John Feldheimer, I think he empowers the Kevin Beggs and the Sondra Stearns of the world to be creative and to be looking forward, pushing the envelope a little bit, if you will. You know, it's not in a lot of our best interest these days to have development deals because there's so many outlets of places that you can sell to. That, you know, a lot of us as storytellers prefer to be free agents these days and go anywhere we want to go. But I just framed a development deal at Lionsgate because I feel like they are forward thinking and they do put story first. Trust me, we're all going to have a budget and we're all going to be beholden to that budget every year. And there's not anybody in TV, maybe Game of Thrones, I don't know. But, you know, everybody's pretty beholden to whatever, you know, money they're going to give you to make your television show. But they do empower the storytellers to sort of go where they're going to go. And they check in and, you know, they're watching you, but it's in a supportive capacity as opposed to the, you know, feeling like you're being fought on creative decisions or financial decisions. Lionsgate's doing some really, really great things, and they have good people over there. And I think you see the proof is in the pudding at the end of the day.
And once again, yesterday, Lionsgate closed the deal with Starz, and I think that's going to be a big step up for both organizations. And you're going to see that really take shape in 2017. The Royals, season number 3, it's now running. Second episode is this Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on E! Check the link to where that network is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program, go online to www.eonline.com. That's www.eonline.com. Mark Schwann, creator, executive producer, writer-director of The Royals, now in Season 3. Thank you so much for joining us this Friday afternoon. Congratulations on Season 3 off the ground. Hopefully many more seasons to come. You really do a wonderful show, and it's a pleasure to have you on.
Simon, you're doing great things, and this was really enjoyable. Thanks for having me. I'd love to come back anytime, and keep up the good work. You're doing great.
Will do, and you're welcome. Open invite. Take care and have a wonderful weekend.
Okay, you too. Thank you.
Mark Schwann, creator, writer, director, executive producer of The Royals, Sunday nights on E!, joining us live from Los Angeles. In a moment, a very special show to know. We're running out an update on our classic trivia question of the week. No winner this week. We were hoping for 2 winners in a row after our big winner, Doug Frazier from New York City, won 3 prizes, not 1, 2, but 3 prizes with a question. So what we're going to do is, because of the short week, we're going to keep the question in play through the weekend and maybe next week. So if you know the question and the answer, you can win Britcom's FAQ, the new book from the fine folks at Applause. Here's our question, which is also dealing with the world of British comedy. Name the female member of Monty Python's Flying Circus. Name the female member of Monty Python's Flying Circus. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to include your name and where you're from. If you burst with the correct answer, you'll win Britcom's FAQ, published by Applause. You can also tweet the answer. Use Twitter and this hashtag, TWBT. That's Twitter hashtag, TWBT. Twitter options made available by the fine folks at Hopscotch. The folks invite you to create your own social soundtrack. Learn how at hopscotch.com. Remember, you got to be in to win, so be in, and all the greatest. And finally, our regular feature is Show to Know. It's usually about a program that is worth watching that you might not know about because it's not well marketed, promoted, publicized, etc., etc. This one is definitely something to watch and is getting a lot of attention. It's next Tuesday's episode of Jeopardy, and it may end up being one of the most unique game show episodes in the history of the medium. And why is because one of its contestants on Tuesday night passed away on December 5th, this past Monday. Her name is Cindy Stowell. She was in her 40s, and she taped her Jeopardy episode in late August. Cindy Stowell was suffering from stage 4 cancer, and in January, she decided to apply online for being a contestant on Jeopardy. She was able to get an audition in Oklahoma City that was happening in early August. And before the audition, she let
a contestant coordinator by the name of Maggie Speak know that she had stage four, and the doctors had told her as recently as late July she would only have 6 months to live. Speak's request, is there any way I can get on Jeopardy earlier if I pass the audition in person, Oklahoma City? Well, thanks to Speaks and the people behind Jeopardy, she was able to not only pass the audition, but then get on 3 weeks later, far earlier than most contestants do. As I said, her episode is on this Tuesday night. She'll watch it. And if you want to know more about Cindy, about what she dealt with, and more about the episode, you can go online at www.jeopardy.com. Incidentally, one of the things that Cindy wanted to do was whatever money she won, she would donate it to cancer research organizations. We won't tell you how she did on Jeopardy Tuesday. We'll let you see it for yourself. But it really is an amazing story, and it makes this Jeopardy episode a very special show to know. And, of course, we join the people at Jeopardy in sending our condolences to Cindy Stovall's family and many, many friends. I'm sure she'll make many, many more from her appearance on Tuesday. Jeopardy appears on most stations around the country, either on 7 or 7:30, 7 o'clock here in New York on WABC Channel 7. Check your local listings for where it is playing in your area. And, again, if you want to find out the station, your area, and the time, go to www.jeopardy.com. Coming on Monday on Tomorrow We Televise, one of the judges for the new version of America's Next Top Model, Drew Elliott, will join us live and exclusive. He's also the chief creative officer of Piper Magazine, one of the most popular fashion magazines around. And America's Next Top Model premieres Monday night for a new season on a new home, VH1. That's Drew Elliott, judge of America's Next Top Model, next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. And coming up a week from today, it's all technology with the senior writer of TechCrunch, Anthony Ha, and the director of product manager for Roku, Lloyd Krenke. That's all coming up next week, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, Monday and Friday, here on Tomorrow We Televise. If you came in late on today's program, or you want to catch up on episodes you missed, we've had some doozies the last couple of weeks, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televise. That's blogtalkradio.com/televise. And don't forget, we got a podcast version of the show. All of our episodes in 2016 available for you 24/7. Download any episode you like at iTunes.com to your smartphone or tablet, and take us on the go this weekend or beyond. Remember, you can also find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and you can email me at simonapple04@yahoo.com. We love to hear from you. Why? Because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator and chief executive of this very enterprise, Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you today by Audible.com, an Amazon company. But Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic weekend ahead. We're back on Monday with America's Next Top Model, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. And once again, Kirk Douglas, wherever you are, have a wonderful 100th birthday. Thank you for everything you've done for this nation and this world over the last century. And we hope your life continues to be well and great on Earth for many, many years to come. Happy 100th B-Day, Kirk Douglas. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.